Okay, here we go. We're starting now on page 89 in the Peleoitz. We're discussing now the idea of the Gentiles. How do we interact with them? How do we deal with them? How do we make it? We can even make friends with them, right? You can even be teachers of them. Did you know that? You can even be teachers of them. Did you know that? I actually have a student. His name is Kus Usterik. Kus, I hope you're listening. He lives in Holland. You know, I met him on the top of Masada. It was a beautiful story, right? Now, Al-Pi Halacha, just to tell you basic Halacha, it's also to teach Tersha Baal Peh to a guy. That we know. Tersha Bechsav, 100% Mutter. And if you have any questions, then it's allowed. Yes.
I know that Halacha for a long time now, but I never could figure out why. If we're chosen to carry the Torah, why don't we teach it to them?
That's a great question. Because the Tersha Baal Peh is like the inner workings of the relationship between us and Hashem. The same way that you have a relationship with Hashem, I apologize, well, with Hashem for sure, but with your wife, right? But with your wife, or you should treat her like, you know, Hashem almost. But you should, the way that you relate to your wife, you have private secrets, you have family matters, you have inside jokes, you have pet names for each other. Maybe when you're angry at each other, you have certain names as well. But the point is, you have an internal working relationship. That's a relationship that's only between you and her. To go around and tell other people, it's like you're giving over too much information. It's PDF. It's TMI. What?
It's only
limited to Tersha Baal Peh. The Netziv actually quotes, because the Torah Hashem made a tzivoy to Moshe Rabbeinu and to Am Yisrael that they had to take 12 stones and to write the Torah on the 12 stones. So there's a different machlekes rishonim, exactly what does it mean when the Torah says you have to write the entire Torah on this. Does it mean, let's say, the Aseres HaDibros? Does it mean the pure text? Or does it mean the entire Torah itself? Right? The entire Torah itself. I think that's really just the second thing. The entire Torah itself. So it says in Netziv, like the Rishonim, I think this is actually how the Rambam Paskins or Ramban even learns like this, that you have to write the entire Torah on the stones. Who's it meant for? And by the way, he says it further than that. It can't just be in one language. It has to be like a Rosetta Stone. It has to be in 70 languages.
Oh my God.
So why would, it says in Netziv, why would we write in 70 languages if it's only limited to us? What? Right, no, exactly. So it's even better. So if it would be in 70 languages, who is that for? Obviously, there's 70 nations, and it's meant to give over the entire Torah to the 70 nations. Because why? Ultimately, the nations can't come along and say, oh, we never heard about this thing. We never knew about it. That's not true. We did expose it. We did explicate it to the world. Okay, the internal workings of, like, you know, where is Tum? Okay, that's a separate discussion. The halachas of what's called Barer, that's by us. But the concept of Leisirtzach HaSignoiv, the idea of Leisigach Shoichad, all these halachas, these are things which the Umas HaOlam, the nations of the world, should know about.
So we can teach them what is actually written, but like the Torah should not pay them.
You don't open up. You know, with your next door neighbor, you don't open up Maseches Tamid and start learning the inner workings of the different tunnels in the Beis Hamikdash and the halachas of Tumah V'Taira.
Okay. Someone has a question about Avraham Yaakov Avinu.
Yeah. The poskim are very clear that you're allowed to teach if they have a certain curiosity and a question, they're able to ask. This student of mine, Kus, how did I even meet him? I'm on top of Masada with my wife. I think it was our Shana Rishana, and it was a beautiful area. It's beautiful. It's like, you know, literally, it's biblical. You're standing on top of like this beautiful mountain looking upon the entire land of Israel, and I needed to use the bathroom, right? And I came out of the bathroom, and I'm muttering to myself, you know, Ashiyat Zar. And I just see this person staring at me like, what are you doing? And he's like waiting for me to finish. And after I finish, I'm like, I smile. I'm a very friendly person. I'm like, oh, hello, how are you doing? How are you? He's like, I'm so interested to know. Can I ask you a question? I was like, yeah, sure. He's like, what were you saying? Like, what were you muttering to yourself? I said, well, it's interesting. In Jewish law, we have a blessing after you use the bathroom. You think to be thankful to God that everything is working well. And we have a blessing for it. He says, are you serious? Really? He was so blown away by the concept. He was so blown away. I was like, are you serious? He's like, I have so many questions. He brings me over. He brings me over to his wife. He brings me over to his wife and his two young teenage children, a boy and a girl. And like literally, like, you know, the prophet Isaiah says that when the Messiah will come, I'm not even joking. It felt biblical. The Messiah will come, that the nations of the world shall grab the four corners of our clothing and say, Jew, teach me the Torah. Teach me the ways of God. I literally had that on the top of Masada, right? So he has all these questions and this and that. We've stayed in touch, literally. I text him every single Shabbos. I wish him a good Shabbos every week. I said, but I told him, you're not allowed to keep it. He asked me once, is allowed to start keeping certain customs of the Torah? Why not? Yeah, I'm just saying I have a wonderful time. I've been explicit with him. Listen, if it was that, I left it obscured that he should keep Shabbos, don't keep Shabbos at Maska. I've told him Lahedia. It's also, he's asked me many times. I want to start shaking lulav. I want to put on tefillin. I want to put on mezuzah. I said, you know, these things, there's, it's not pasha, they're not allowed to do. But a goy is absolutely forbidden from keeping Shabbos, right? That's the Gemara. That's the famous Gemara, right? I explained to him, I said, because that's the...
My father said to me, we were walking from Hampstead to Goldsbury.
Okay, yeah. Took a little bit louder. I can't hear you so well.
We were walking from Hampstead to Goldsbury.
Okay.
It's basically like a 45-minute walk.
Right.
And we passed a random guy in Hampstead who acknowledged that we were Jewish.
Right.
And goes, good Shabbos.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So,
your father had a shy of you. Let her respond back, good Shabbos.
So my father was like, yeah, have a good day.
Oh, yeah.
I hear. Saying good Shabbos back to him. Clearly he wants it. It's the same idea.
I hear. They definitely. I hear you. I don't think it should be elsewhere. But nonetheless, you know, you're allowed to. Because you asked a very good question, which is, if a God gave us a Torah, someone doesn't want us to like interact with the outside world with that. It's one of those interesting things because on the one hand, you know, we are an Orla Goyim, and we're supposed to be out there and teaching and being and explicating our ideas and putting it out there. And there are Baruch Hashem a lot of people that do that. But there's also the element of that we can impact the world on such a deep level when we're strong within ourselves, okay? Now, the problem is when it becomes strong within ourselves to the extent that we then block off other people, that's what's scary. Because unfortunately, the world, let's be honest, has not given us much confidence that we can trust that they're going to like not kill us, to put it very mildly. You know, it's a very, very scary thing that unfortunately we live in a world where Jewish history has shown us that when given the opportunity, unfortunately, they have taken the choice. Well, will they? Who knows? But they have taken the opportunity to kill us in very deep ways. So it makes sense that we're distrustful of them. But the point is that we have to figure out a way to be able to be nice. What?
How did an Austrian get to the top of Mossad without meeting a Jew before that?
Are you asking about Adolf Hitler? Who's the Austrian that got the head of who?
Well, what was this guy?
Which guy?
The person you were talking about.
Oh, the Mossad. Oh, I think you said, look at the Mossad. I was trying to figure out what's going on. I didn't know where he was going with that. Yeah, Kus, I apologize. Wait, how did he get to the top of Mossad? I think he took the cable. He hadn't had an opportunity. Oh, so he tells me like this. He says, I've been trying to connect with other Jews. He says, I went to Mea Sharm, and my wife and I, when we're going around to different, I know it's Yerushalmis, different rabbis in Mea Sharm, trying to ask them questions. And lo and behold, they were not interested in talking to him, right? Either for multiple reasons, because they think they're trying to convert them, or because she was a very, very sweet lady, amazing people, amazing family, right? But no, but unfortunately, we've created and again, it makes sense. The world has made us very understandably distrustful of them. On the one hand, we have to be able to give a person a little bit of a hand as well, to be able to allow them a peek behind the thing. Because you have to understand, the Goyish Welt is so broken. It is so destructed from within. It's rotten from the core. We understand this in preaching to the choir, Baruch Hashem. There's such lack of normalcy within these families. They don't sit together with their own kids, assuming they even have kids at this point. They don't even sit with their family. They don't talk to each other. They don't have Shabbos meals. They don't have any, they have nothing. And when they see a happy Jewish family, to them, this is like, oh, this is the way life should be. When they see it and you make a kiddush Hashem, and when you give a smile, a pashut smile. By the way, you know how many times I go through the airport with my kids, and my kids are all over the place. Baruch Hashem, I got very, very jumpy kids. And we're in the airport, and the fact that you see people come to us and say, I love your family, it's so beautiful, it's so good to see it, because they don't see it anymore. The world is destroying the concept of families. And when you see a good, happy family, even when you think you're failing, and that's the point I was trying to say about the airport, is I feel like I'm a total failure. I feel like I'm getting angry at my kid. I'm just totally losing my Caleb. I can't get out. They still see it, because whatever they're seeing, it pales in comparison to what they're dealing with at home. Kids who unfortunately are on drugs, dying of early deaths, completely unproductive, have zero connection to the family to any degree. Massive liberals that want to support Hamas. Like the world is broken. So when people can appreciate, so we have to understand, we're from a place of strength. When you walk through the street and you walk in the United States, it's one thing, but in America, if you're going to the airport, I was just in Orlando this past Shabbos, right? They call it bageling. You've heard that phrase? Being bageled. Oh my God, I was going through the Orlando airport, and every 2 seconds, good Shabbos, Rabbi, good Shabbos, Rabbi. People that did not look Jewish in the slightest, right? Not Jews at all, and not Jewish looking. And the amount of Jews that are like, just excited to see a rabbi. But I got so many people coming to me and saying, are you from Israel? I says, yeah. We are so proud of what Israel did to Iran. We can't even imagine. This Mormon couple out there I was talking to for 45 minutes. It's the stuff that you can do when we're not traveling with your family, right? It's like an actual fun time to travel. I was talking with this Mormon couple from Utah, Salt Lake City. They were so excited, like, wow, Israel is amazing. What you guys are doing. a Mormon couple, like Mormon religion. Mormon couple, yeah, Mormons. He only had one wife, right? He only had one wife. As far as I know, I don't know, maybe that was her day for vacation. The point is that they were extremely respectful of Yiddishkeit. Extremely respectful. They love Jews. There's so many going, but yeah, there are a lot of people that hate us too. Yeah. Halacha, Esav, Yaakov, right?
Christians say, they'll say to you, you're chosen, right? But they don't know what that means.
Okay. You know what? So you know what? What means for us is that means for that we have to know what it means to be chosen. If they're telling us that, then we have to hear it ourselves. Now, we Baruch Hashem, we understand it. Anyway, let's continue the Peliyot, because we said we're going to do Peliyot. That was just the Hagdama to the basic idea of our communal relationship with the quote-unquote the other, right? The non-ones. We have to live in a world where, listen, we don't have to live next to them. We don't have to marry them, of course, God forbid. But to have a positive, healthy relationship with people that we can gain, and they can see what a normal, healthy life is, it's worth its weight in gold. Amru Rabbi Sinai Zecham Levracha. Our rabbis have said in the Gemara Yushalmi, Chumas, that's very important, not to be disrespectful or to be the type of people that are like ghettoized. Now, what do I mean ghettoized? It means that you don't care so much to the extent of what goyim think. It's very common if you live in very big cities, if you live in Borough Park, you live in Williamsburg. I don't want to point out anybody specific because I don't mean anybody specifically, but I mean like very high dense Jewish population. You get so used to each other of what's considered like Heimish, right? In Israel, this is like a classic example. In Israel, you get on the bus, you're going to get pushed left and right. Try that in like Austin, Texas. They're going to, what's wrong with you? Now, I think it's a beautiful thing in a weird way. It's beautiful because we're so mishpacha, Daniel. We're such mishpacha with each other that it's like understandable. You and your brothers, you get in the van, you're going to bump each other. It's just a normal thing. You're so close with each other. But with the Gentile, they don't understand what it means to live in a dense population. So what could fly in New York, you know, double parking, and no one's going to really be makbid on you because they understood you're running in to go to Mincha, and you kind of are in the edge into the disabled.
In the middle of the street there.
Right. The point is that doesn't work among the guy. We have to be taking into account because we're living as members of a society that they don't understand these things. And by the way, it applies to Chilonim as well, but we're going to stick with the goyim. Right? Because through them, our security is guaranteed. We have to be nice and respectful to our host countries. Right? There was once a story of someone who was a shepherd of pigs that hit the goyim. I'm sorry, they hit the yidin. Later he became a melech. Even though he was somebody that was not necessarily so nice to the Jews, but he had a good relationship with Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua did a very big toivah to him, even though technically he wanted to kill the Jews, he held up. Why? Because he had this relationship. He had a positive relationship. They call this shtadlanus in America. Ever heard this phrase before? Like hishtadlus, but shtadlanus. Like advocacy. Tor Mesorah does it, the Agudas Yisrael does it, or the OU does it. Becoming close to the politicians. What?
What's the case that
this Gemara, the truth is I'm not familiar with the Gemara. I'm basing it just off the words, what he's saying. He's saying that there's clearly a story of where somebody was a shepherd of pigs that had some type of sichsuch with the Jews and wanted to kill them. So he eventually rose to be the head of, somehow he, like, I don't know, he became the tyrant or the king, whatever it was. But because he had one positive relationship with a Jew, he ultimately held back from not destroying the Jews. That's clearly what the parents say. Meaning, even theoretically, if they're not able to do anything at all, you don't think, they're not going to hurt us. They have no political power. Nonetheless, maybe that person will go ahead in the middle of the night, and to be honest, and this is very scary, to firebomb. Right? And where's David? Right? It's happening right now in Australia. The people are firebombing the shuls over there.
Really?
Yeah. Again,
it's happening in Riverdale for a while.
It's
well.
Terrible. In Montreal, they're getting bullets get shot at the shul.
Really?
Yeah, BB guns, bullets. It's a really scary thing. Oy beems ha derech im ye im achuzas meray av yoch lovos lede sakar hine ki kein loy toyv lis kaitet dem goy. It is just not good to keep fights with goyim. I feel caught in a buzzing shit. Vishasli ki loy teda ma yele yoyim vedim sa oivral vinshmart mo nav shaseichem. Because such a person who's not careful about these relationships will ultimately, unfortunately, put their life in sakana. This is, I don't want to get too intense. But this is kind of like what has developed negatively from post the Holocaust. On the one hand, of course, it's totally understandable that the Jews post Holocaust should say it's terrible that we were taken as sheep to the slaughter. We couldn't rely on anybody else. We can't rely on any other power, any other nation, any other rules. we have to purely rely only on ourselves, right? A person would say, of course, rely on Hashem. Of course, I agree with you. That's not the point here. The point is that I can then, I don't have to comport how I act around people. And comport means I have to control or to maintain or to watch how I act around people that don't like me. It's become a very common thing now. I'm like, oh, I'm Jewish. I don't care. I'm going to just like show up, you know, put my big fat stomach on the table and say, okay, deal with it. That's not how it was. That's not what the Pelagius is saying. The Pelagius is saying we have to be mindful of how we act and interact with people in communities. Unfortunately, in certain... Midos is extremely important. We become so used to being only around Jews that when you move to I'm saying a very important point. When you move to like Hollow, New Jersey, or you move to some random community, because now Lakewood is bursting, and Tom's River is bursting, and Jackson's bursting, and you're moving to out-of-town communities that are Goyim still, full-on Goyim, and a couple of Jews have moved out there, you can't just be like, okay, we're going to just take over the whole place, and we're going to park on the side of the street, and we're going to block this, and we're going to not care about that, and we're going to get rid of this rule, and we're going to totally fight
we're
that rule.
Yeah. We need it if people come from France and America and they come here. The first few weeks I was here, I had a very hard time with people making U-turns in the middle of the street.
Yeah, it's very important. It's very important. A person has to be mindful of the community standards that they're coming into. You're coming into something.
People,
so you need to be mindful and respectful.
They stand on the horn. If you do that,
I'll put in a good word to the Chavir Knesset, to get deal with this issue by Vagan. I'm sorry. It's like sounds like you're really getting your, goading your...
The first few months I was here, I couldn't understand.
All right, okay. Anyway, The point is, Vikitzer, the point is very Vikitzer, is that a person has to be aware of how they respond and interact with people in a community, a new community, a community that doesn't necessarily have a large Jewish presence, and even with that Jewish presence. But the problem is people will call me today, because why? People will say, Rabbi, you're just being very out of town, right? I'm from Silver Spring, right? Silver Spring, I grew up with Goyim and Jews, and it was very understandable. You don't park here, you don't double park there, right? All these waspy white ideas. It's a challenge, it's a big challenge, but I don't think it's, just because it's from out of town value doesn't mean it's not a value. Because people from Brooklyn will say, oh yeah, but I double park, and I double park, and I triple the double park, because why? I need to do this, and everyone understands it. I'm going to hold back because I love the Jews. The point is, Vikitzer, is that a person has to understand that we're not